All right, welcome everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts. I'm half of the, or probably one third of the team of Unraveling the Secrets. It's officially Sunday morning, late Saturday night here in the East. I'm Stephen Roberts, and as I said, this is Unraveling the Secrets. No James Swagger and no Michael Stephen tonight. Not sure what's going on with either of them. Probably both sleeping. They're both a couple lightweights anyways. So anyways, Mike and I talked to someone earlier. She was willing to come on again. She was on a few weeks back. So I'm going to introduce her again. It's Suzanne Pozell of OccupyCorporatism.com and USIndependent.com. Welcome back, Suzanne.
Yes. Thank you. Don't worry. Everyone messes up my name. Everyone does it.
Well, I've known you long enough. I shouldn't mess it up.
Even my grade school teachers would mess up my name.
Oh, yeah?
Don't worry about it.
Well, at least you didn't have a name like Trudy, and everybody called you Gertrude.
Right. Yeah, everybody reads it as Susan, even though it's got an extra N and an E. It's not for decoration. You actually have to say it.
Yes.
But, Common Core, public schools.
Yeah, speaking of Common Core, anyways, have you did any kind of research on Common Core?
Well, I had an experience today at a retail store.
Did you?
I did. The cashier closed the drawer. I'd given her $7 and she owed me, 67 cents.
Oh, goodness. Must have been
and
a younger
girl. She
couldn't
girl, figure
huh?
out.
Couldn't.
And so she called her manager over and the both of them were trying to figure it out. And I said, well, 33 from 100 is 67. And he said, isn't it 34? I said, no, that would be half of 67. He says, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. And then he gets out a calculator because he didn't believe me that 33 from 100 is 67. So
right.
Once the calculator confirmed that I was correct, they handed over the 67 cents. Now, meanwhile, the people behind me are shaking their heads and looking away in shame because two grown adults in there, at least, the manager must have been in his mid-30s. The cashier was at least, you know, mid-30s to early 40s. These people should have been able to do this basic math, but it was a very arduous task.
Yeah, but you see, they're the older part of that generation that grew up with calculators in the school, or maybe they're about the middle of. Because I didn't even know what a calculator was until, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 years and after I graduated high school, and the first computer started coming out then, and we just had to use pencils and paper or pen and paper.
Or your fingers.
Or your fingers, yeah.
My elementary school teacher said, keep all your fingers, keep all your digits, so you'll be able to at least count to 20.
Yeah. Well, please excuse the noise here, but I'm going to log into the chat, and I'm going to try to turn the thing off as soon as I can. There it goes. A little bit of Angel there in the background, but I took it off. I should have signed into the chat a little bit earlier. But we're gonna talk about some things that you've been writing about here lately, Suzanne.
Okay, what do you want to start off with?
I don't know. I had your site up earlier, but then I've gone to 15 other things, and I believe you had something. You told me about Facebook and Zuckerberg, and two other CEOs are going to be looking into doing something.
Oh yes, the three amigos.
Three amigos. What are they going to be
doing? Three amigos. Mark Zuckerberg, Ashton Kutcher, Kelso from That 70s Show,
yeah.
Ow My Eye, okay.
Uh-huh.
Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah.
And Elon Musk from the CEO of Tesla Motors have put their money together to fund a secret artificial intelligence corporation called Vicarious.
Ashton Kutcher has money?
Ashton Kutcher, Kelso, folks, come on. Who hasn't seen That 70s show?
Right.
Come on. So, yeah, he's buddies with these two guys. I guess he's got, or at least he's got fame.
Well,
you know, they're going to have to promote this thing.
He's the marketing one, yes. He's
he could be the celebrity on staff.
Yeah. He's the look behind the programming and the propaganda.
Exactly. Well, yeah, he is the propaganda and he is the programming.
Yeah, right.
Yes, people can do that. You can get a job and you can get paid very well to do that.
Sure. But what are they going to be doing then? They're looking into technology or
Vicarious is an artificial intelligence corporation, AI.
Oh.
And what they are building is a positronic net. A positronic neural net.
Oh, that's
which
nice.
Which is the same thing that Data had in his, you know,
sure.
his brain.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So the first thinking and feeling androids, maybe, or
On their way to being absolutely 100% autonomous, just like you and I are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All these guys are putting in millions of dollars. It's $40 million that they gave, reported. Now, Elton and Ashton have not commented on it, but the financial support from, the spokesperson from Facebook said that Zuckerberg's investment in Vicarious, which hasn't been previously reported, is a personal one and does not reflect Facebook's interest in using Vicarious software. Whoa, hold on a second. The investment in Vicarious is a personal one?
Sure.
So he's bored. You know, he's the tennis shoe wearing t-shirt and jeans, but he throws over a big coat like his dad gave him one, and he shows up at these meetings and he stands up on stage like he's all cool and stuff because he's young and he's hip.
And
it's personal that he wants to invest his money in a company that is building positronic neural nets.
Yeah.
AI robots.
He's also the one that calls all of his Facebook users dumb effers. Yeah.
Well, let's be honest, folks. Hold on a second. Let's be honest, folks. This is a corporation. You signed their terms of service, but you didn't read it. And then you're shocked when they pull stuff back. It's their service. You know, we need to start our own. We need to stop complaining about the service that they're giving us, which isn't any. And we get what we pay for because we're not paying for it. So that's what you get for free, folks. We should start our own then. Somebody needs to get up and figure out how to get a hold of some people who know how to do this and actually do this and then say, bye-bye, Facebook, and leave en masse and go to that other place.
Excuse me here, Suzanne. I'm just trying to reposition my cows on Farmville here.
Whoa, wait a minute.
I'm teasing you. Yeah. Okay, that was a little bit slow on that laugh there, Suzanne. I thought you might have been a little quicker.
Sorry. Yeah, you might not be able to move your cows or your farm.
But
people ask me, invite me to play all of these games. I don't play the games, folks. I'm sorry. Stop asking me to play them. I won't.
Yes, I know. Me either. I haven't played one game on Facebook, and I don't plan on doing it now. This really kind of reeks of Ray Kurzweil and the transhumanism agenda.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, people forget that last December, Zuckerberg opened up a project from Facebook. You know, reportedly, his spokesperson said that it's a personal choice and that he doesn't, you know, it does not reflect Facebook themselves. But the Facebook Corporation is now invested in a research laboratory for artificial intelligence. So then it would make sense that he did this in December, and a couple of months later, he dumps $40 million with his two best buddies into this place that's building a positronic neural net, because the AI lab that's building the body of the robot would probably need a brain, right?
Yeah. Well, you might think anyways, yeah.
So this is a sound investment for him. This makes sense from a business perspective. From an outsider looking in, it's very creepy. Because Bill Gates is going around with his little evil Dr. Evil snicker going, hey, we're going to replace all of you with robots.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. Don't worry about it.
Yes, it is. Resistance is futile. You will assimilate.
You will, or you won't get the things that you need to live.
Exactly. Yeah, all of these movies and these TV shows, just millions and millions of people think that they're just fantasy, but Well, it's like the Hunger Games, or maybe the Running Man, or even Mad Max movies. Those are the type of scenarios that we might be looking at in the future here.
Well, yes, but we have to remember that that's a sensationalized version of it meant to elicit emotional responses from us. The reality of it is very, very different. I genuinely do not believe we were supposed to be flying around in cars by now, right? With the Jetsons.
Well, sure. Yeah. Well, they had them, they had that idea back in the '50s. Yeah. They used to show them things on TV, the futuristic things that they're going to be doing. They had, well, some of those things we do have now. If you recall, I don't recall seeing them on TV, but I've seen them on videos. They used to show things back in the '50s where some of the homes. We have some of that technology right now.
Xanadu.
Yes, yes, yes. You can just speak, and your home will do whatever you want it to do. It'll turn the temperature down, or it'll turn the TV channel, or you can turn your water pool up or down or whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, well, Bill Gates lives in a smart home.
Does he?
And all of you, everything is being integrated into the internet, period, folks. That's it. I've got an article coming out on Monday about how the internet has already been taken over. It's been taken over for a very long time. All of the information is controlled on the internet. It's been controlled for a very long time. And it has nothing to do with SOPA or PIPA or ACTA. It's all been done through corporations.
Oh, yeah.
And I will explain exactly how it's been done and how it's being done right now. And there's absolutely nothing that you can do about it. And that's the sad fact.
Yeah.
We need to get to the people who are writing the software. See, the problem is the software. The software is algorithms that is making decisions, and they are not human. They sure. are computers.
Yes. I think there's statistics out there that say like as high as 40% of your Facebook friends aren't even real.
Well, sure, but that's true for a lot of reasons, folks.
Yeah,
you can buy packages from Facebook and other corporations or other businesses or whatever you want to call them that do this. You can buy fake accounts, and it's the guy down the street who has 25 different accounts. It's the talk show host who has 50 different fake accounts. It's the corporation CNN who has, you know, 20 or 30 fake accounts. They do this for promotional reasons on social media because 41% of the audience is getting their news directly from their news feed on places like Facebook and Twitter. So these media corporations, these talk radio shows, whatever it has to do with journalism and news media, they're going and buying these fake accounts. It's not just the CIA. This is a marketing tool.
Yeah.
And they use this because they go into the groups and it's, you know, John Jim and Susie Q, and you wouldn't think that it's a bot for CNN.
Right.
Posting their information, trying to get it out farther for people to read, because they're not going directly to, Yahoo or Bing or Google News. They're going directly to the Facebook or Twitter and seeing what's in the feed and what's important, or Reddit.
Oh yeah.
Reddit is huge. Two
yes,
million
it is.
People every single morning go to Reddit for their news.
LinkedIn is too.
Right.
Yep. Actually, I think, Twitter's number two. So it's huge itself too. You know, I heard a few months back, I know it seems like a bit of a joke, but it really isn't, that, 40% of the 18 to 34 year old demographic get their news from sources like Jon Stewart and Jay Leno and Stephen Colbert.
Well, that's been true for a very long time.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, folks, because if you watch those shows, which I do on occasion, it's a lot more entertaining than watching Brian Williams.
Sure, talk. sure, but they actually get they consider it a news source.
You're getting the same amount of news.
Yeah. With a different slant, right?
Well, people forget that they don't call it a show for nothing, okay? The Rachel Maddow Show, The
right.
Daily Show.
Right.
It's a show.
It is.
It's entertainment. You know, there's something that they talk about in the business that they don't readily talk about in public, which is factual entertainment. I call it infotainment. The industry refers to it as factual entertainment. Why? Because you think it's true, because it's loosely based on some actual facts that you can go look up. So if there's like one or two facts and then some total malarkey and then a couple more facts and then some more malarkey, you can look up those facts in between the malarkey and say, well, wait a minute, you know, five or six out of 10, I could find the facts. So that must mean that the whole thing is true. We make that association in our brain. Well, they know that.
Yeah. That's
so that's why they do this factual entertainment.
Exactly. That's their little hook. They have just enough good factual information to keep a vast majority of the audience. That's our biggest downfall. I mean, I don't know. I guess it boils down to, Suzanne, is nobody likes to hear the truth. The truth smacks you in the face.
No one likes to hear something they don't want to hear. No one likes to hear anything they don't want to hear. In fact, some people will just shut it off and say, never mind. Let's talk about the weather. How's the kids? Other people will get really upset and storm off. And most people just literally will not hear it because their face is buried in their smartphone. They don't want to hear anything that they don't want to hear. Now, if you say something they want to hear, their ears perk up real quick. They put down the mobile device. They're listening. You have their attention.
Cognitive dissonance. Yep.
It is. Yeah, it's perfect because we all do it. Because we don't like things that we don't like. Because we don't like them. And it sounds kind of juvenile to say it that way, but that's actually true. We just don't want to deal with the things we don't want to deal with. So if we don't have to, if somebody else is dealing with it, that's fine. We'll let it, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. But if it's something that we're interested in, or if it's something that perks our interest, or if it's something that's taboo, maybe we have a problem with someone from our childhood and we have an authority issue. And so we've put it off psychologically onto some topics that we find fascinating and they're taboo. So we feel like we're pulling one over on the people who said, you shouldn't do that. Whatever the reason is, we're attracted to certain things and we're not attracted to other things. So you got to be careful, because if it looks really shiny and it's very attractive and it touches you somewhere deep inside your that mushy part of your emotions that nobody can get to, you're really being pulled into some heavy duty marketing, and you probably want to like turn that off or walk away or clear your head in some fashion, because you're being mind controlled to do something that you normally wouldn't do if you were in your right mind.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Geez, I wish I had Mike here, because I would ask him a question. It was back before the new year when they were beating the war drums about Syria. He sent me a link, and then we had a little Facebook chat, and he said, so what do you think, Stephen? And I just told him the truth. I said, it's nothing but a distraction there, Michael. He says, oh boy, I hope you're right. And that's what it turned out to be. Nothing but a distraction. They were just beating the war drums, trying to keep us in that constant state of fear.
Well, fear is a great motivator. Fear is one of those emotions, and anger as well, is one of those emotions make for great consumers. People buy things because they're scared. They're scared that they don't look right. They're scared that they don't have the right toys. They're scared about how they appear to other people. We're constantly living in the shadow of other people's opinions and trying to take on their opinion as if it were actually who we are, and then acting accordingly when that has nothing to do with who we really are.
Yeah, exactly. Money can be the worst progenitor of that fear. It's all about the appearance. Here in the last, 60, 70 years, probably. It seems to be all about the appearance. And I think people have this false illusion that money makes people better, and it doesn't. More often than not, people with money actually do less. Statistics show that poorer people give more than people that are more to do and more well off.
Well, money is like cocaine. It just enhances your personality. So if you were a jerk before you snorted the cocaine, you're going to be a real big jerk afterward. Money has the same effect. It affects the same part of our brain as cocaine. So we have this. Now, this is a program. This is not something that is inherent to us from our, you know, early days when we were, you know, still living in caves. This comes from years and years of programming to get us to believe that if we don't look a certain way or do a certain thing, then we're not worth anything. You know, like L'Oreal, you know, you're worth it. So dye your hair with this product that is going to infuse your scalp with heavy metals poisoning. And if you do it, you know, periodically throughout your life, you'll end up with some form of cancer or neurological disorder, like, I don't know, Alzheimer's. But don't think about that. You're worth it. Please put this stuff in your hair.
Yeah. Yeah, they do seem to tell us what beauty is and what beauty isn't.
It comes from this deep, hardwired programming in our brain. We have a need to survive. And the way in which we do that, well, some of the ways in which we do that, I don't want this to be all inclusive. Some of the ways in which we do that is to find out who is the most successful in our group. Copy that person all the way down to their hairstyle, the way that they look, the way that they dress, the way that they talk, what they do, mimic everything that they do, and congregate around them. Get as close to them as possible, because whatever they're not eating, they'll go ahead and throw to those guys in their entourage. Whatever women they're not having sex with, they'll go ahead and pass along down to their entourage. And if you can't get into the entourage, they've created something called a fan base. So then you can feel like you're part of the group if you belong to some group that is somehow affiliated or close to that center person. You can't get in the entourage, you can be a fan. And they take that way in which we do things and twist it around and say, okay, Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Hugh Jackman, this is how men should look. Scarlett Johansson, Jennifer Lawrence, and Angelina Jolie, that's how women should look. Anyone who doesn't look like that, there's something wrong with you here. We've got a bunch of products that can help you. We've got systems that can help you. We've got groups that can help you. Whatever your problem is, we've got doctors who do all kinds of different types of surgery.
Pills, surgery, and machines, yes.
Yes. Also, you know, whatever it takes to get you to look as close as possible to those people that we've already deemed are beautiful, successful, sexually attractive. If you don't look like that, you're nobody. We have a collective self-esteem problem, and it's ingrained in us, and it feeds into this marketing that this spell that we are under from all of these corporations. And it's not just the physical objects that we see in the stores. The most insidious products are the ideas. When they implant the idea into the mind of the collective consciousness of a culture or a nation, and then completely change over a generation, an idea over, I don't know, how to raise children or what is the best food to eat. Atkins said meat and potatoes for years. And then he said no carbohydrates, right?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yeah. He's the one that invented the low carb, right?
Right. Now you will lose weight, but the problem is, folks, your body needs a decent combination of all of these minerals and vitamins and nutrients. So if you cut out one, your body is deficient, and your body has this ingenious way of making up for it. Let me explain why we get fat. We get fat because our cells have too much of this stuff inside of it, so they're going to save it for later. And so eventually it collects around our gut, on our thighs, in the back of our arms, and on our back, or under our chin, or wherever. This is our body storing up for later. These fat diets then trick your body into eating its own fat. And the layperson will say, well, you know, that makes sense. And they say it in a way that would make sense because you don't understand anatomy and physiology, probably because they didn't really teach it to you in school. But when you do that to your body, you cause other problems that will manifest later on, like problems with your organs functioning properly, nutrition deficiencies that can end up deadly. You can die of potassium deficiency. I have a friend who 2 years ago passed away because she had the laparoscopic. She was supposed to have the Lap-Band surgery, but they did the laparoscopic, gave her a second stomach. And her body could not absorb potassium. No matter what she did, she even took supplements. She even took the supplements that her doctor wrote for her, the prescription ones, not just the ones that you get in GNC. And she died of a potassium deficiency because her body could not handle the surgery that was designed to save her life.
Wow, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. She was 26.
Oh, wow, that's even worse.
Yeah. She was 26.
Yeah. Well, we're at the first half hour here, Suzanne, so I'm going to go ahead and take a break. I'm just going to run these promos. I'm just going to mute because I need to go get some more water. So we got about 2 minutes here. I could pop another one on if you want to take about a 3-minute break, though.
Oh, I'm good. Whatever's good for you.
Okay. Yeah, I just need a couple minutes to go get some more water. So we'll be right back. All right, and welcome back, everyone. That's a crazy commercial Angel's got there. At Jackal's Head, War on Terror, promo F. I had to get a bunch of new, I had to ask Angel to pass me all of the promos he has. Suzanne, I had messed up a few days ago, and I was cleaning my desktop away, and I had all my promos on my desktop, and I put them all in a folder, and now they're not in my, well, they weren't in my broadcasting player, and I had to get all of the old promos and commercials back from Angel to put them back in my player again. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had any commercials at all. But I was thinking about during the commercial. Actually, I think about a lot of things, but I wonder, I know it's going to be difficult, Suzanne, to try to change people's minds to try to get back to a more simpler way of living. I don't know. I just keep hammering the solution to me anyways out there on the airwaves. Stop feeding the beast. Get off the grid. Get off of their system. Get away from their system. Get back to a more simpler way of life. Get back to community things. Get back to community gardening, community shopping. Stay away from the mega corporations that control all of America and the world.
The problem is the self-esteem issue that I was talking about before we went on break. When we are personally invested, see, some of the products I was mentioning, they're ideas. They're not things. So we tend to think of ideas as personal. We tend to think of, we like to quote people. There are quotes that are passed. I mean, we still quote Socrates. We find profound things in the words that they used and the way that they said them. And our admiration for that person only infuses more endearment from that quote to our personal paradigm. So we take that into who we are. And we believe the idea of whatever we think American or being an American means. We've taken that idea into our hearts and our souls, and it defines who we are. Now someone comes along and says, America's bad. That person doesn't hear America's bad. That person hears on an emotional level, I'm bad. And that person, they know that they're not bad. They know that they do good things. They're a good husband or good wife, good father, good mother, good grandmother, good person, charitable, you know, the wonderful person. So why would this person say that they are a bad person? When we define ourselves through the ideas that have been given to us, then we are defining ourselves by somebody else's opinion of who we should be. And when we try to be someone that we're not, it doesn't work out, folks. I mean, remember your teenage years? It didn't work out so good. It wasn't until, for me, it wasn't until I was almost 30 years old that I finally embraced who I was and said, okay, this is who I am. These are my faults. These are my attributes. I'm just going to work with what I have. And I'm going to be the best me I can possibly be. And if people like that, that's great. And if people don't, that's fine. Because I know that that's a person that I don't need to talk to. Who wants to talk to someone who doesn't want to talk to you? Nobody does. I mean, we all have this kind of like Stockholm syndrome where we beat the drum of a dead horse or a dead relationship or a dead job. A place where you live. You hate it, but you still live there. You hate your car, but you still drive it. You hate your job, but you still have it. You hate your relationship, but you're still in it. You hate your parents, but you won't talk to them. You won't tell them how you really feel. So nothing ever gets resolved. And we all hate everything that we do and everything that we have. So we're always wanting something else. And then, ooh, look, there's a shiny new thing on the TV. What is that? Oh, they look so happy driving that car. I wish I was that happy. I think I'll go take a test drive. You get in the car, instantly your brain goes back to that commercial. And so you do feel much better driving that car. That's how it works, folks, because yeah. Your brain has already made the connection. See, long ago when you were watching that commercial, your brain made an association to an emotional reaction that you had while you were watching it. And so now when you are in the midst of that thing, your brain recalls that memory and then subsequent the emotional reaction. And so you feel the emotion again. And you feel much better. You're in the place that you imagined or fantasized that you would be, and you fantasize that you would feel better being there. And guess what? Lo and behold, you actually do. So you end up signing the papers, and now you're in debt to a bank and a dealership for whatever, how many, 50, 40, 60, 80, 100 grand to something that you don't need and is going to become a source of burden in your life. But you did it because you felt good.
Oh, yeah. Because everybody knows when you pull up to a stoplight next to a Mercedes-Benz, you really do feel inferior to that guy that's got his $250 sunglasses on, and he just thinks so much of himself, you know.
Oh, I do. When my husband and I got together, we bought a Dodge Neon, and I love that little car. That's like a zippy little car. You know, that thing wants to go fast. It looks like a soccer mom car, but it really wants to go super fast.
That's what I have, is a Dodge Neon.
Oh, I love that little car. It's a zippy little thing, you know? It's like, you can't do 35. You can't even do 55 in that car. You're already doing 55 in that car. You're like, oh my God. But we bought, 1988 or 1984 Audi. And this Audi was one of the last ones that they made from the cars that they actually raced around the world. So this car was a rare car, and my husband was all enthralled. He's a mechanic by trade, so he loved working on the car. And all of a sudden, I started to notice that people who drove Audis nodded at me or were courteous to me, you know, even in the parking lot, because I had this car. I didn't realize it was a status symbol. But I learned very quickly that it was, because I was being treated differently, even though it wasn't a brand new Audi. This was a classic car, so people had respect for it. Well, that it was a very strange place to be, where I knew I didn't have the money that they did, and yet I was receiving the same nod of status for having driven this car.
I bet that was silly, wasn't it?
It was absolutely silly, but it's a symptom of a problem. It's a tell of what's going on, that it doesn't matter that I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt. If I'm driving a cool car, I must be wearing expensive jeans and expensive t-shirt. And it just looks like I'm wearing a ratty old pair of jeans and t-shirt. I actually paid money for these ratty clothes. You know, people will think that in their brain.
Yeah. I tell everybody, I see younger people in their 20s and that wearing these pants that have rips all up and down the sides, or either lengthways or sideways up and down the legs or across them. And I ask them how much they paid for them jeans. And they say anywhere between $70 and $85. They buy them like that. And I said, well, you know, I guess it must be it must have been a fashion statement when I was a boy, because I had to wear pants like that until my mom could get patches to put on them. I tore my pants up a lot of times, and I only got two or three pairs a year.
Well, I remember in the 80s that we used to do that. If you couldn't afford the jeans that were already ripped, so you would get the cheap jeans, and then you would just cut the rip across the knee, and then wet it and wash it and dry it and wet it and wash it and dry it, because you didn't want to go to school with that just frayed look. You wanted it to look like it was worn in. We did that every time you get a new pair of jeans. It's fashion. Isn't that ridiculous? When we lived on an organic farm in Colorado, you were constantly in ripped up clothing. It just happens when you're working. When you're physically working all day long, you know, something rips. And everybody had that, and it didn't matter. And you notice it if you went not into town, but into the next city over. Like, if we had to go to the grocery store, we'd have to travel like an hour to an hour and a half away. And when you got there, then you noticed. And it made me self-conscious. I have to be honest with you. There were clothes that I saved for myself and my son when we would go into town, to go grocery shopping, because I noticed that if you didn't look a certain way, and meanwhile, we're here working on a farm, but if we don't look a certain way, we tend to treat people just a little bit different based on what we think they look like. And that's our filter. And if they take on our opinion of them, then they become self-conscious. And we've created this circle where we've created this little mini relationship with this person that we don't even know. We're basing our opinion on what they look like. And I've met very wealthy people who wear ragged clothes, just because in the South, It's no joke. The guy who's sitting on the porch can probably buy the entire town, and you would never know it because they don't care about how they look. They're good old boys. But if you go into a city, all of a sudden, how you look defines who you are. So since nobody cares about who you really are inside, you have to put on this costume of what you think everybody thinks is acceptable and fit yourself into this mold as best you can. Literally, if you're trying to get into a pair of skinny jeans and do all of these stupid things and waste all of this time and money. And you know what's funny is when they do these questionnaires with old people, like past 65 or I apologize for saying it like that, but 65 and over and even people who are close to death, and they ask them questions like, what was important to you? What would you do differently? They wouldn't think about these minuscule things of fitting in all the time. They would take what they think into consideration more than what other people think. They would do things that benefit them more than benefiting someone else. They would try to be more of who they are, you know, as opposed to spending their entire life trying to fit into a mold that someone told them that they had to fit into, whether it was a parent or a teacher or some other authority figure who told them that they had to do this or otherwise they were worth less. And then we get back to the self-esteem problem.
Worthless or worth less. Yeah.
Worth less.
Yes, exactly. There's a, I think most everybody knows Dr. Phil McGraw. He's got the TV show. He's out there in California now, but I used to watch him every once in a while, and I've heard him say on a few different occasions that people need to worry less about what others think of them. And he says something like, if people actually knew how much others thought of them, they would act differently and they would do differently, because a lot of the times people don't think about others. It's the illusion that we get caught up in, and everybody is judging us.
Yes, that's a very good point. We police ourselves. They started off with this idea that they could infuse the social consciousness with these certain morals and values that were their morals and values. And eventually we would conform to them. And they noticed that we were doing it to each other. And they've gotten to the point where we do it to ourselves. There's a really nice quote that I can't remember the guy who said it, but it's not the conversation. I'm messing this quote up. It's the conversation that we have in our head after they are done talking.
Oh, yes, yes.
That matters.
It's I've done it myself.
We all do it.
What are people going to think?
What is somebody going to think? What will my mother think?
What will somebody think if I do this, if I say this, if I say that, if I do this, if I do that? What are people going to think? Oh, my God. What are people going to think? Oh, goodness.
But we do it. We all do it. We all do it. You know,
yes,
today,
yes.
My husband cut his hair. I have not known my husband with short hair. In all the years that we've been together, he's always had long hair. So he cut all his hair off today. And I love my husband, but I was a little bit concerned because I've never seen him with short hair before. And you know what? He is even more handsome. I can't stop looking at him. But
did you ask him who he was and what'd you do with my husband?
And it's almost like, you know, it's like being with, he looks totally different. So it's like my husband, but somebody different. It's got some weird qualities there going on, but my inability to see my husband for who he sees himself was my problem. And then I created this concern that he might not look good because he cut his hair. It's just hair, folks. Who cares?
It is, yeah.
2 years ago, I cut all of my hair off. I'd grown my hair out down to almost the small of my back. And I cut it all off for Locks of Love.
Oh, okay.
And sent it off. And it took me 2 years to grow it back, and it's almost as long as it was when I cut it. And my husband didn't care.
Right.
I did this. This was something I wanted to do. I thought if somebody could have my hair and they don't have it because of disease or whatever reason, that means more. I can grow mine back. The reason why we do things are personal, but if we don't convey them to other people, it doesn't mean that what they think we're doing or why it is that we're doing it mean it's true. We don't have to take on their opinion of us. We can remain ourselves and be proud of who we are when we do wonderful things for other people just because. That means that's a part of ourselves that we should be fostering, that we should be encouraging. We should, every single day, we should look for a way to help others. That movie, Pay It Forward. You want to talk about predictive programming, folks? Put down all the scary fear porn, and why don't you watch Pay It Forward? Because if we all did that, that would be amazing.
Pay It Forward. What was that about? I think I must have missed that one.
It had Joel Haley Osment, just before he did The Sixth Sense, and
Haley Joel Osment, yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
Okay.
And Helen Hunt. And this little boy had a teacher, and the idea was that you do something good for someone, and when they want in gratitude to return the favor, you tell them to pay it forward. The next time you see someone who needs something, you do that. And through this social experiment, he was successful in changing the people in his immediate area, the people in his whole entire town. Think about it, folks. If we just stop doing what they say to do, okay? Stop giving your money to these charities. If the cancer were to be cured, it would have been because, my God, we have put billions of dollars
into trillions.
Trillions, okay?
Yeah.
And it's still here, so obviously they're not doing their job very well. Stop funding them.
Yeah.
Okay? If it's not working, don't keep feeding it.
Yeah.
Find something else. So what else can we do? Well, we can invest in ourselves. We can make sure that people get access to good food by helping our local farmers, the ones who are using non-GMO seeds, the organic farmers and the ranchers who are using non-GMO corn and grass-fed and the chickens, you know, make sure that they are free range and that they are able to do what they normally naturally do and that they're not being fed GMO corn. And that is a great investment. Take your money out of these stupid charities that are not doing anything. Let me tell you what your charities do. This is an insane story. So in 1985, we had Live Aid, right? And we had this big concert, and the lead singer from Pink Floyd, Gandalf, was
Bob
there.
Bob Geldof.
Geldof, yeah. Right, I'm sorry.
Geldof, yeah.
$68 billion. By
really?
2005, by the way, has
really?
Been given
that's,
over by, yeah.
That's how much they've raised?
By, yeah. In 2005, they had raised $65 billion.
Wow.
From 1985 when they started.
Billion or million?
Billion with a B.
Wow.
Since 1985 to 2005, they raised $68 billion. But let me tell you what they did with the first influx in 1985. They gave the money to the military, who used portions of it to bring food to areas in Ethiopia that were just outside of Ethiopia, because they were moving the Ethiopians out of their homeland because they were taking over. And they were fighting guerrilla forces, and they thought that the Ethiopian people were helping the guerrilla forces, who were actually just the natives saying, I want my land, get off of it. And so in this forced population transfer, the Ethiopian people suffered, because 150,000 to 200,000 of them died during this forced transfer. And Live Aid paid for this. Now, everyone who donated to Live Aid in 1985, if any one of you are listening or you know someone who did, I'm pretty sure that they had no idea that their money was going to fund this project to kill 200,000 Ethiopian people. And I'm pretty sure that if they had known that, they definitely would not have donated to Live Aid. But folks, these large nonprofits, this is a racket. This is an ingenious way to separate you from your money. Because the real answers, we don't have to give all of this money to science. The real answers are right in front of us. Look up Max Gerson. Look up his daughter, Charlotte Gerson. 30 Days to Raw is a great documentary. It's about an hour and a half long. They cure type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Type 1 is the one that you're born with. And they completely cure this gentleman of type 1 diabetes. And all the other people went back to their doctors after they went to this retreat, and using Gerson type therapy of flushing the body, flushing the system out, and then only introducing good nutrient-rich food and juice to hydrate and get your body kickstarted going again so that it can handle other more difficult things to break down, because right now our bodies are just kind of chugging along. It's like you have a car that needs premium gasoline and you're putting regular in and the engine's breaking down and it's making these weird clunking noises and you're like, what's wrong? It's because you can't afford the premium gas. Your engine was designed to eat certain food. These GMO and these processed foods are devoid of the nutrients. So your body's running on empty. Then on top of it, we don't drink enough water. And when we do, it's full of all sorts of fluoride and psychotropic drugs and all sorts of stuff. Chlorine. Don't drink the chlorine.
Yeah, exactly.
Our bodies, it's no wonder that we're coming down with disease and dying. But we don't pay attention. We don't, we put up the shield because we always ate Betty Crocker cookies. I mean, our mother baked Betty Crocker cookies or Betty Crocker pies, so it must be good. There must not be anything wrong. If there's something wrong with Betty Crocker, then there's something wrong with my mother, because my mother would have known. She never would have given me food that would have killed me, right?
Grandma cooked Betty Crocker. Yeah.
See?
Betty Crocker was probably the first that started to domesticate the American female.
I think religion did a better job at that.
Yeah,
we should go.
That's probably true too, but up until, what was it, the 30s or 40s or whatever, women most women that cooked, they cooked from scratch and they cooked everything themselves. They didn't have to go to the grocery store and open up buy a box and take it home, open it up and add some milk to it.
Well, this was the advent of commercialization and consumerism in the United States. In the 1950s, they had all those gadgets, all those neat wind-up stuff, and convection ovens came out, and
power mixers, yeah.
Right, exactly, the handheld mixers and all of that. Everybody wanted that. A refrigerator was a big deal, and an oven was a big deal.
It was
a big deal. So you could spend all your money on all these things, and it would save you time, but the problem that they found... And it's funny because it coincided with the use of Prozac.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Women were depressed because they didn't have a sense of purpose anymore. And I'm saying this as a woman, okay? Raised by a feminist and became a housewife and a mother because I saw the value in it. But when you take that away, the people become depressed. When you take their way of justifying their existence and providing value
their usefulness
to those that they love and care for, people get depressed.
It's a usefulness, isn't it?
Yes, we have. Yes. And I'm sorry, folks, but we all like to feel useful. My son and daughter really like it when I let them help me. And they feel great. And you know what? They do a great job. That is one of the few times where they don't mess up. They do exactly what they're told and they have a good time. When they feel like they're helping, when they feel like they're being useful, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's when they take that and they say being useful is shutting up and going to a cubicle and sitting there for 8 hours and doing this stupid repetitive job that means nothing and doesn't show any value for you as a person and doesn't highlight any of your attributes. I'm not talking about that kind of usefulness.
Yeah, I wonder if psychologists and psychiatrists, I'm sure they wouldn't possibly tell their female patients that that are worth, or well, I guess their husbands might be worth millions and millions, that they need to go out and do things for themselves because they have a nanny that will take care of their children, and they have their own personal cook at the house, and they have a gardener, and they have a pool boy, and they have this, that, and the other thing, The women are in their offices paying $150 to $200 an hour for a psychiatrist, and because they're just depressed.
I'll tell you an interesting story. When I got married, I asked my mother, because I came from a divorced home, what was the worst part about the divorce? And she says, you know, looking back, the hardest part about the divorce was I had no idea what I like and what I don't like. I had no idea how to decorate the house. I didn't know what kind of art I like. I don't know what kind of color I like. I didn't know what to do with myself. I had this house and half the furniture and I had to replace it. And I had this opportunity to express myself and I didn't know who I was. That's our problem. We don't know who we are. We don't ever take the time. You know, when we take the time is when we're little kids.
Yeah.
When we're little kids, my son is, wants to be an engineer so badly. He loves to take things apart and put them back together. And it's a good thing that his father knows how to fix everything because my son doesn't always know how to put it back together. But my daughter, you give her a paintbrush and she will just paint these beautiful paintings. We have some of them up on the wall. They're amazing. Now, some, not all of them, but some of them are just, wow, oh my God, that is amazing. She's obviously got a talent. And she can't draw. She refuses to draw, and she refuses to use crayons and coloring books. But you give her a paintbrush and some watercolors, and oh, wow, does she create these beautiful pieces, abstract art. It's some of it's almost like Pollock. It's beautiful stuff. She needs that fostered. That is an expression of who she is inside. At 3 years old, she's expressing her personality to me through this art. If I were to then send her to a place that would rip that out of her and teach her how to be an automaton, she would lose that ability, but she would never lose the want and desire for it. And that's where public schools are really the most insidious.
Yes, they are.
Well, it beats out of the children their creativity, their imagination, their individuality. But folks, you can't beat it all the way out. There's something in their heart that they always feel there's something they never did. And there's always a little hole, and they try to fill it. And that's why we have these 7-year itches, and we have these midlife crises.
Midlife crisis,
and,
yep.
Exactly, because we just didn't take the time to develop who we actually are.
Yeah.
And how we want to express ourselves.
Yep. And let's go ahead and take our second break for the night then, Suzanne. All right, everyone. That 29 and a half minutes went really, really fast. So we will be right back here in just a couple minutes. All right. And welcome back, everybody. We're in the second hour here. I still have Suzanne Pozo with me. So, we're going to continue on. I mentioned to Suzanne during the break there, I didn't, run the commercials. I mean, to where we could hear them, but, my one network, the former MSI, which is now People's Internet Radio over in Ireland, we are going to be, well, there are some already in the group that are doing this now, but, they were given a $2 million studio with, television equipment or television taping equipment, more or less. And, they're going to be given some bandwidth to be on Ireland TV, Irish TV. And, I'm, going to be doing some things on it myself with, the video and, the radio like I do right now. I'm not doing any video right now. This is just the radio I'm doing, but, I'm going to be doing at least a 1 or maybe 2 hour show. I don't know whether it's going to be once a week or what the deal is going to be, but, I'm going to be doing something on Ireland's newest network. It's called Irish Independent Network. There are
congratulations.
Some, yeah.
That
yeah.
sounds fabulous.
Yes. And I'm going to be trying to get all the big people I can from over here in America because I've got a feeling I'm going to be giving the American perspective over in, Ireland like I have been for the last, 9 months or so. I've been one of the American guys on the Irish network over there. And, I think that's what I'm going to be doing here very, very soon.
That's tremendous. I, we've got some wonderful contributors at the USI.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Kevin Galele is, going on a hunger strike.
Oh, is he?
And, people, please support him. He is, the deputy, to the Prime Minister of the People's, Party in Canada. And he is doing this hunger strike. He's flying to Rome, to the Vatican. And he's doing this to force the Vatican to answer to documents that they signed several decades ago, basically giving their consent and future complacency to depopulation policies performed by the United Nations through various corporations and foundations and countries and governments and NGOs. And we will be, most of his documents are up on USI. He's a staff editor for the usindependent.com. And you can also find Stephen Roberts there too. And so Kevin will be leaving in 2 weeks. And this is a tremendous thing that I think we all need to get behind. And if you can donate, he has a GoFundMe. And you can link up to that on the usindependent.com under contributors, Kevin Galele. And please donate if you can, because this is a serious thing. We need to have some acknowledgement that they are covertly destroying massive amounts of populations, mostly in the third world. I mean, there's depopulation agenda in the developed nations, but in the underdeveloped nations, it's just so much easier. They pay the government some money, a couple million dollars, and then they go into these little provinces and these cities and towns and just inoculate people and they die. Or they sterilize them and they die of complications. In the 1970s in India, the U.S. government and the U.K. government, under the guise of foreign aid, gave several hundred million dollars and spent almost as much in sterilization initiatives. And most of these women died because these were makeshift clinics out in the rural areas, and they really couldn't handle what they were doing, but they were doing surgery to make sure that these women were sterile. And some of these women would go home and bleed to death and die. And well, this is okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that seems to be running by the playbook. You know, there's a lot of times that some countries won't get UN funding or American funding or some other European countries' funding unless they have some sort of a eugenics type policy that gets put into place, you know.
It's easy to do it in these underdeveloped nations because the governments are absolutely corrupt. It's harder to do it in developed nations because if all of a sudden 47,000 American children died after receiving inoculations in America, everybody would, you know, spit out their coffee in the morning reading that in the newspaper all over the world.
They would be driving to the state houses and dragging out their representatives and demanding what,
sure.
To know what is a problem, you know?
But a couple of years ago, that same event happened in Pakistan. 47,000, not 4,700, 47,000 children died after receiving inoculations for the polio vaccine given to them by Bill and Melinda Gates under their foundation and Gavi, which is an NGO for the United Nations.
Yes.
Under the World Health. Nobody said very much, and those who did really didn't get hurt. You know, I wrote articles, a lot of people did. Nobody really talked about it. It got swept under the rug. That's why it doesn't work in the developed nations. They have the covert, they have the poison in the food and the water, because that way, who knows? You know, most people don't know about parabens in your toiletries, in your shampoos and your conditioners and your facial scrubs and in the baby shampoo and the Johnson Johnson baby shampoo. So while you're scrubbing this shampoo into your little daughter's head and washing her hair every day thinking, oh, how cute she is, you make the little unicorn horn and you take pictures and you don't think to yourself when she's 42 and says, come to you and says, Mom, I have breast cancer, that it was the parabens.
42? How about 22?
Sure. How about 12?
Yeah.
You know, I hate to tell you guys and folks, men, listen up here, but you do have breasts. They just don't protrude. And the incidence of breast cancer in men is skyrocketing because of this paraben thing that's going on and is causing men to die of breast cancer.
Yes, it is. Well, some men don't have boobs, but some of us do.
No, you all do. You have the mammary glands.
I'm just teasing you.
Well, you know, I know it's a touchy subject, but if men if the incidence of breast cancer in men is rising, that should tell you something. Okay, fine. It's rising in women. Well, we've never really cared about women anyway. A lot of the medical history over the centuries has left women out. It was a woman's problem. That's why she died.
Yeah, just a lot of the history has been just horrible to women. Not just a lot of the medical history. It's just a lot of history.
Sure. Well, you know, I thought that this was funny, but I got married in Oregon. And on the application for marriage, it said that in this state, I am not recognized as chattel. And I said to my husband, where are women recognized
God,
as chattel? Huh? And let's never go to that state.
Thank God, huh? See, you know, Suzanne, there's reports all the time at, well, it's in the alternate media, but, the mainstream probably wouldn't touch it, but there's reports that, a lot of countries in Africa and in the Middle East, when the, Red Cross pulls up, their trucks pull up, the people start running. And
well,
there's
you
a
know,
good
that,
reason.
That sounds a little sensational to me, but I would understand the concept behind it.
Yeah. Because they know what's coming.
Poison. Well, it's Oregon. You know, we lived in Oregon for a while. We moved out of the state a couple of years ago. But We lived there for some time, they decided, the public health, Oregon State Public Health, decided that these parents were just not either following the schedule of vaccines or just completely not vaccinating their child. And they started freaking out. So they started putting out all of this propaganda to get parents to go ahead and vaccinate their children and why they should. And all these PSAs started coming out on television and on radio. It didn't work. So just this past year, they are passing a legislation that says, just like in California, if you are not going to vaccinate your child, you need to sign off on a sheet of paper that is administered to you by your pediatrician or the head nurse that says, I understand that by not vaccinating my child, I could be endangering the health of my child and blah, blah, blah. Or if you don't sign it, your kid is not allowed in school. And this is beyond the waiver. I know everybody's shaking their head going, mm-hmm. Well, you can sign a waiver for religious reasons. They attach this to the waiver. They're making it difficult for people to have the waiver legitimately. And who can prove, you know, that you have a religious, idea and then that precludes you from vaccinating your child. It's very difficult to prove.
Yeah, and who can prove that you can't? Exactly. Yeah.
So they're making them sign this document that says they understand that they could be endangering their child. Well, folks, we understand. You know, it's not just, there's a reason why the media and the AMA and the physician, the medical community in general have been attacking anti-vaccine movement. It's because there are study after study after study that directly correlate thimerosal, which is the mercury-based preservative, to the advent of autism, period. But they don't want you to know that because that is one of the most used preservatives in all vaccines.
Mercury is, yeah.
The preservative thimerosal, which is based, yes. Yeah, so
thimerosal, yeah.
It's causing neurological disorders. And that's just one way. They found that there are color dyes, and I've written about this several times. I forget which color dye, if it's red or yellow. It's one of the two. And it has been linked to hyperactive disorders. So while we're saying that ADHD, which is a disease that was made up, folks, we're saying that these kids are hyperactive. Well, look at what they're ingesting. Because I'll tell you, when we installed the filter into the kitchen and we only used filtered water and we got rid of all the fluoride in the food and also in the toothpaste, within a week, my son, his comprehension abilities, his ability to focus in on our lesson plans and not get distracted, his ability to retain the information and be able to expound on it and think higher thoughts, it was amazing. And it all happened within 1 week. That was just the fluoride.
The fluoride. Oh yeah. Wow.
It was just getting rid of the fluoride because it actually lowers your IQ.
Sure. Well, yeah, I think it stops the, brain synapses or it interrupts it somehow, doesn't it?
It retards the ability for you to use your cognitive abilities. Is basically the layman's term of what it does.
Okay.
So you can't make certain connections. We have, I'll give you an example with people who have seizures. I'll give you a personal example. When my son was born, I had eclamptic seizures. I had preeclampsia during my pregnancy, but my doctor, my medical doctor, didn't tell me that. So I went into eclamptic seizures. Now, I had two of them, and for the first 6 months, I had a problem with short-term memory. And it was one of the most frustrating things I've ever been through because I have always been an intellectual throughout my whole life. And yet I could see someone speaking. I could hear the words, but there was something that didn't connect in my brain that I could not comprehend what they were saying. Literally, I knew what they were saying, but there was a break in my brain, a relationship, a synaptic relationship that I had to work on to redevelop. And so with these neurological disorders like autism, there is a break, and it is caused by this heavy metal poisoning. And they've done study upon study to show that this is true. So Jenny McCarthy is not out of her mind. And the effects of it can be mitigated through diet. Because think about it, folks. You're just like your car. If your car needs premium gas and you're putting in regular, your engine's going to break down. If you're putting in GMO and processed food and unfiltered water and sodas and coffee into your body, is going to break down. So if we're putting in heavy metal poisoning into these children when their brain is just developing, when their immune systems are just developing, my daughter is not vaccinated, but they wanted me to vaccinate her with 65 inoculations before the age of 2.
65. Wow. They recommend now, isn't it like 170 something or?
You know, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I decided I wasn't going to vaccinate. My son had 2 febrile seizures that coincided with the vaccines. And that's when that was before I started writing articles or anything else. I just noticed that, we vaccinated him. And then he, within 3 or 4 weeks, had this horrible febrile seizure. And they told us that it was because he was heat sensitive. So here I am freaking out because we're in Colorado and it's 3 digits and I'm, you know, putting him in the cold bath and a cold shower. And he's like, Mom, I don't want to do this. I'm taking his temperature and I'm freaking out. And then the next year when we had him vaccinated, it only took 2 weeks for the seizure. And the second seizure was absolutely horrible. And then I looked it up and everywhere I looked in medical studies and PubMed, the number one reaction to vaccines is febrile seizures. When I brought this up to his pediatrician, she said, you know, I'm the pediatrician. You will do what I say.
And she lied.
My kids.
She lied to you, right?
No, she said, I am the pediatrician and I say that they need them and they will get them.
I am God. You must do
yes.
as I say.
Okay. And I said, well, I'm their mother and we're no longer coming back to this office.
Yeah. I'm surprised she didn't call the police on you, Suzanne.
And it wasn't that long. And I saw that woman on the Alex Jones show.
Right. Yeah.
And it was like maybe 3 or 4 months later that she came on and I was like, oh my God. Yeah. I know exactly how she feels and woof.
Yeah. There's been.
It's not that hard. We went and found a holistic pediatrician in the downtown Portland area. There are holistic pediatricians that you can find.
Huh,
and
I'll be darned.
You don't have to. You treat the kids at home.
Yes.
You know, I had a really bad double ear infection late last year. Really horrible stuff. I mean, terrible. Someone, and I was at my wit's end. I was actually going to call a doctor and someone told me to get colloidal silver and that was gone within days. It was gone within days. That's amazing.
Done. Yeah.
Never had a reaction like that from any antibiotic or any drug or anything yeah. that they gave me at the doctor's office.
Well, there's been cases of people taking their children to boys, I think, especially. Well, I'm not sure if it's boys or girls, but I think boys get hit harder with autism. But I think there's been cases where people have taken their boys for shots and they've had to rush them right to the emergency room 20 minutes after they had the shot.
Yeah, there was a baby that just passed away and it was within the same day of receiving the shot. You see pictures of it all the time.
Yeah,
you
well.
Know, babies have horrible, it's because their immune system.
They don't have an immune system yet.
Dirt don't hurt.
No.
The reason why is because there's beneficial bacteria in the dirt.
In minerals.
Yeah. And your skin, in fact, the bottom of your feet is the most porous part of your body.
Yes,
but your skin, and you need this.
You're talking about earthing, right?
Yeah, I'm talking.
Earthing,
you should take
yeah.
off your, it's springtime, folks. Take yes. off your shoes and wow. go walk in your grass, in your backyard.
My grass is still frozen though, and there's still about 6 inches of snow, but.
Hey, don't do it where, if you live near, Stephen, don't do that.
Yeah.
But where I am, if you're in Washington, you just take off your shoes and walk barefoot outside. It makes you feel better. There's a connection to everything. And that's just,
yeah.
I'm not being hokey. I'm not being like, you know, new age.
It makes
age-y
you feel
spiritual.
Good. No, it makes you feel good. And, you know, a lot of people will take off their shoes and, you know, like you said, just walk around their yard. And I remember doing that as a kid and then just laying down in the grass and just looking up into the sky and how good it felt.
Absolutely. Yeah, we did that too. We had this huge willow tree that covered everything. And when you went into it, it was like in another world. And there was a canal and a drop off. So you would sit on the edge of the canal and you would be.
Yeah, your imagination worked, didn't it?
It was beautiful. It was almost like pixie dust and it was really neat in the underneath there. when we were on the farm, there were trees that were hundreds of years old, and you go sit underneath them and you really, really feel it. And I'm not one of those weird new agey people, folks. I'm not. I'm a very logical
either.
Based, you know, sensible person, evidentiary, but there is an emotional side to us that we need to cultivate. We need to take care of ourselves. Otherwise, we are subject to manipulation. When you don't know who you are and you don't know what you want, then if somebody comes along and tells you who you are and tells you what you want, you'll go ahead and do it. And after a while, you realize it's not working, so you go and try something else. And you know, when I was a kid, when you're a teenager, I remember my mom used to say, oh, Suzanne, you go through phases. And every time I said, no, Mom, I really believe this to be true. This is who I am. You know what? It is a phase because I'm trying on different personalities. Kids do that. They're trying to figure out who they are. When you stifle them at that point and redirect them to another purpose, they never forget that they are lacking who they really are and that disconnect to themselves. So they try and satiate that need by joining groups, by drinking too much, by having hobbies, by filling the void in some way that makes them feel good, except it's always temporary. It's when we, like I was saying before, it's when we stop taking what other people think of us and taking it into ourselves and making that our reality and try to be someone we're not, that we make horrible decisions for ourselves and we get the kind of situations that we're in.
Well, you know what? I should just mute and just let you talk. You do such a great job of it. You're just a wealth of knowledge.
I have two small children and I'm thinking about this constantly now because my son is at this age where all the things I've been telling him about, the world that we live in, the way things are set up and the stuff that's in the food and the water. He's taking that and he is now asking further, information and further questions. And just the other day he wanted to watch, how it's made so he would know how hot dogs are made. And he was enthralled with this process, and it was absolutely disgusting to watch this.
Yeah,
for
but
like
they
15 minutes. It was terrible.
They didn't really show you the true way to make a hot dog, though, because I think if everybody's seen the truth on how they make hot dogs and bologna, I don't think anybody would eat it.
Just watching this when they puree it into this goo and then they pour the water and watching it like going in the turn, it was disgusting. It was I don't want them just from watching that. It's burned into my memory.
Yeah, right.
Every time I see a hot dog, I see that image. But what they do is they use that same thing. See, folks, I now have an emotional attachment. I had an emotional reaction to watching that goo being swirled around and swirled around. So now hot dogs are disgusting to me. So they take an emotional reaction. You know, you ever notice some of the commercials make absolutely no sense until you see the logo at the end?
Yes.
It's like a mini soap opera, some of them. And then all of a sudden they flash Christian Dior. And you're like, what? Thought I was watching porno. What's going on here? And what you don't understand is that whole 30 seconds or 1 minute was designed to get you to react emotionally. And it is on an unconscious level. So unless you're paying attention, you're not going to catch it. And then the next time they want to invoke that emotion to get you to buy a product, it correlates with other things that you see in your environment and you react emotionally. Your brain goes back to that emotion you felt when you saw that commercial. And now while you're out in your environment and you come across that emotion, the first thing you think of is that Christian Dior and you go and you buy it and you think you smell better, but you really smell horrible.
Yeah. You know, Suzanne, I gotta tell you the truth. Some of those things don't work for me because I bought an Axe, the body spray, and I don't ever have any women chasing me, so.
Exactly. Who in their right mind would believe that? That is ridiculous. It's funny. It's almost like, you know, seeing all this stuff going on about the Malaysian flight. You know, it's comical to me now.
Yeah.
I crack up when I see it. People bring stuff to me. I just laugh.
What do you think? I think that plane and all of its passengers are safe on an island somewhere. I don't know. This is just me.
I think we should ask ourselves some questions.
Yeah.
First of all, we should ask ourselves, how in this technological age can you lose a plane? Okay. Second of all, they lost contact with the plane. And then they say that it veered off its course. Well, when you lose contact, you don't know where the plane is. So that theory is out the window. the zombie theory, the patent theory, Bermuda Triangle theory, the Young Turks making fun of all the theories. There are some serious logical questions that people are just glossing right over, because the sensationalism of a disappearing plane is absolutely phenomenal. You can't buy press like that. You can't buy publicity like that. It's phenomenal. They've got everyone asking questions. Yeah. And it's not just the people who are deemed crazy tinfoil hat wearers. It's everybody. And like I was watching last night, they're on CNN. They're talking about the zombie plane, how everybody lost cabin pressure dropped and everybody passed out and the plane just sort of zombies through the air. Yeah. And then crashed.
It's working. It's totally working. They've gotten a few weeks out of it, and they're probably going to get a few more weeks out of it. Out of the magician sprinkling the little magic dust in front of our eyes to distract us. It's
right,
working.
But then Courtney Love comes out and she's got pictures of it, and she draws these little happy smiley faces on it and says she's found the plane. The point is, folks, it's like, how do you get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop? No, the world may never know. We may never know what happened to this plane. And at this point, it no longer matters, because the point of the story has already been made, which is they can get us swirling around on any kind of crap they want us to at any point for as any length of time that they want us to do it.
Yes, they can. And this is a good time for our last break here, Suzanne. All right, everyone. We got about 32 minutes left, so we're going to take this last break and come right back for the last 30 minutes. All right. Welcome back, everyone. We're in the last end of this stretch here. Last 25, 26 minutes, somewhere around in there. What are we going to finish off with, Suzanne?
Oh, geez. Well?
Look through USI.
Through my website. Yeah? What seems interesting?
Look through USI. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting story. This is out of Oregon. Their Cover Oregon, which is their answer to Obamacare, they received $305 million in federal grants and spent $130 million on a website created by Oracle, and it's a complete catastrophe. In fact, the House Representative Greg Walden wrote a letter to the General Accountability Office complaining about the catastrophic breakdown of Cover Oregon as unacceptable, and taxpayers deserve accountability. Basically, 4,000 applicants applied for Cover Oregon. None of them were Oregonites. None of them were people who live in Oregon. What those 4,000 applicants were undocumented immigrants with pregnancy services that were once under the Oregon health plan coverage, now applied to Cover Oregon. So these were illegal immigrants who were pregnant, who were then transferred to Cover Oregon to make it look like there were a bunch of people who had applied for this Obamacare Cover Oregon debacle. And it's just not true. $130 million for a website that does not work. And it was contracted by Oracle, or is contracted to Oracle, rather.
$130 million? That's what the website costs?
And it doesn't work.
The taxpayers? Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
Ellen just had the president on a few days ago and said that 5 million people have signed up.
Maybe for Obamacare, but for Oregon, each state has their own answer to Obamacare. And so the states will facilitate through federal. Oracle built this website, and it's just like healthcare.gov. It doesn't work. And one of the things, here's the funny thing. So when Cover Oregon asked Oracle what was going on with the website, why they had missed deadlines, why they had poor programming and software malfunctions, Oracle then increased their billing. So for every complaint, it costs them money. How ridiculous. They're complaining about shoddy labor, and Oracle says, oh yeah, I'm going to bill you for $10,000 just for complaining.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
There's a man out there in Oregon. I was trying to think of his name. I just messaged somebody. Maybe she can tell me what his name is. I cannot remember what it is now, but he's a bit of an activist up there, and he's he's going around to communities and getting the local legislators to pass laws on stopping a lot of federal things from happening. Paul Sanfuego, do you know him?
No, I don't.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of fracking stopped. He's getting major federal funding for just all kinds of projects stopped in areas, and they're doing it by passing local laws, more or less using the local level, using the local power, the local sovereignty to stop a lot of things from happening.
Well, that's where we need to be.
Yeah.
We need to be at our city council meetings. We need to be at these ordinances. We need to know what our city is doing. Most people don't realize that AT&T and IBM, by the end of next year, by I think it's October or November, they're going to be integrating the connectivity for the smart cities. So everything will be connected to the internet, connected to servers through IBM, and connections with technology provided by AT&T, and fiber optic cables brought to you by your good friend Google, who's been buying up fiber optic cables like it's going out of style. So we're all going to be integrated and connected, and there's just no way around that unless we go and get our butts down to these city ordinance meetings and start saying, no, don't sign those contracts. We don't want that, and force them not to do it or replace the people who are going through with it.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to pass you another link here. This is, I think, his website there. And he's going around to wherever people can, fund his little, he gives little speeches, little presentations and stuff like that. He's just going around from community to community teaching people what to do and, just kind of taking back our own personal sovereign power back from the government.
Well, this is participation. See, we live in a constitutional republic that has been sort of covered up by this big tarp called democracy. We don't have a democracy. That's not what this country was intended to be.
Not at all.
And so, I'm sorry, folks, constitutional republics need the support of the citizens that live underneath it. And constant participation, which means you do have to care about what's going on in your city. You do have to care about who's getting elected on the local level, because that's where all the action is. That's where the NGOs are going to. There's a reason why ICLEI, which is a United Nations NGO, goes into your local town and speaks to the city council and gets things passed there. They don't go to the federal government. They go to the local city. Why? Because that's where all the action is. Because if the cities are changing, then the states are changing. If the states are changing, then the country's changing. The federal government has to follow suit or enforce it.
And they become irrelevant. Yeah, I've tried a couple times to get him on, but I haven't gotten anything back from him. I don't know. He seems to be either too busy or I'm not good enough or something.
No, I think you're taking it the wrong way. See, he's doing such good work that he's so busy that he can't come on. And that's where he's needed, you know?
Yes.
It's unfortunate because, you know, I understand as a broadcaster, we want to have these awesome guests all the time, but these people that are really busy helping to save our communities, we need to keep them, let them do what they're doing.
Yes.
And help them do a better job and support them in any way we can.
Yes.
Seriously, if we are not brazen enough or courageous enough to get out there, and I'm not judging anyone because it's very difficult to speak publicly and it's very difficult to allow yourself to be seen in public and to be part of a movement, especially if you are a figurehead of that movement. It takes a very brave, courageous person, but if you can participate in a myriad of other ways that help lift up and support that person, because those are the people that we need to make sure become successful, because when they succeed, we will succeed. See, when they help us get our constitutional republic back, then we get to live as citizens under a constitutional republic. And that's what we want. See, if we see people getting to the point where they are giving us what we want, we need to go and support those people and lift them up and make sure that they're successful. Because like I said, their success is our success.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. That's what we need is some, just little victories, and they can, get out over the internet, and, one little victory can lead to another little victory, You can't win a war overnight, but you can win a victory overnight, or you can win a little battle overnight.
A war won are several strategic battles that are won, and it's over time. And so just because this guy won the battle doesn't mean that he won the war. Just because you won this battle doesn't mean that you got it either. But the strategic points, you know, the Valley Forge, right? And Little
Yes.
Bighorn.
Yes.
We remember these things because those were pivotal moments where the game changed. And so if we take that example and learn from it, it's strategy, folks. Pick up Sun Tzu and read it, The Art of War. You might learn something. We have to be strategic. See, we are fighting a system that is so intellectually beyond our capabilities. Seriously, folks,
And they have 1,000 times the resources we do, too.
And we are, but see, that doesn't matter because it's all in the mind. And if we were able to logically deduce and not emotionally react, we would choose better things for ourselves inherently. Because why wouldn't you? So if we are consciously making decisions in our life and thinking logically about the pros and cons and the consequences, good or bad, that will arise from making these decisions and collectively make a conscious decision to do better for ourselves, which then permeates out into our immediate environment, our community, our state, and our country. This is a wave that we need to start. The problem is, again, we have a self-esteem problem. We have programming issues. We let somebody else do the work. We've gotten to the point where we're just absolutely lazy. It's much easier to click, click, click on a website and agree and share an article than it is to actually get out and go to your city ordinance and not allow yourself to be Delphi'd, but actually speak out against ICLEI and NGOs coming in and bringing Agenda 21 into your town. But if we all did this, I'm serious, it would put a really big crank in their plans and they would have to stop. And once they stop to pause to go to plan B, that's when we strike, folks. But it has to be strategic.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I heard a young woman last week say in a video, she wasn't a collectivist, but she said we had to be collectively all individuals. And we have to collectively think differently.
Well, okay, let's analyze that statement. Collectively, individualism is thrown out.
Yes.
There is no such thing as a collective individual. However, we can all agree that fluoride in our water is bad for us. If enough of us agree that fluoride in our water is bad for us, we can collectively make a decision that we're going to, Lisa Brunfield from, Guerrilla Radio, Freedomizer Radio with, Austin Thomas.
Right.
Has started a petition. She went down to the city and she needs 150,000 signatures. If you're in the Colorado area, sign it because she's getting fluoride removed from the water. So sign that. She needs 150,000 signatures. Contact her on Facebook and sign that. Lisa Brumfield.
Yeah. Do you know if she saved her home or whether she lost it or what? I know there was a time back last year she was fighting to try to keep her home.
I do. I don't know. The last I heard that she was still in litigation. I don't know what became of it. But what she's doing as an individual, we can collectively agree that, yes, we agree with that. So then the next thing that we have to do is act upon that. See, you can have knowledge. You can know everything in the universe. But if you don't act upon it, you have no wisdom. Wisdom is knowing what to act upon and doing so. So we have an opportunity. See, someone created a consequence. Lisa in Colorado set up this petition to have 150,000 signatures. And if she gets that, then she can be on the ballot to have fluoride removed from her city water. And everyone will benefit from this. Collectively, we can make that happen. Individually, we can agree that fluoride is actually damaging in many, many ways to us, and we should not be ingesting it. So this is how the system has to work for us. Because if we do these things all the time, they can't do what they're doing. They just can't. If we shifted all of our money into our local community, they would have the, all of the big box stores would go out of business within 6 months. And it's just economics. They would shut the doors.
They would.
All of the small businesses could then hire these people because they would be making so much money. So the people would move from Target to the local hobby shop and they wouldn't lose their job.
They would be expanding. Yeah.
And they would be expanding. People who were entrepreneurs and were looking for an excuse to start a business would then do that. And you would have businesses popping up. See, the non-compliance system works. It actually works, but it's in your mind. People think that because they don't buy GMO that they're not complying. No, that is an action that you take based off of this idea, but the idea begins in your mind. And it begins with the conscious decision to stop reacting emotionally to information.
I know.
Once we do that, we can make conscious, logical decisions that benefit us, which benefit ourselves and our immediate family and our communities. And therefore, things will just naturally progress into what we want.
Yes, they can. I know what it was. The other thing I was going to tell you, Suzanne, ever since I was a little boy, I used to listen to, well, there was just the AM station when I was a little boy. You know, there was just AM. There wasn't any FM. FMs didn't even come in until like early 80s, whatever it was. But I would hear the talk shows on the radio. I'm trying to remember some of the people I would listen to, like Paul Harvey, and yes, Larry King. The ones at nighttime would be like Wolfman Jack, Casey Kasem, and there was a show on the radio. I think it was called I don't remember anyways. But anyways, I always had a little dream since I was a little boy that I wanted to do radio when I grew up, and it just took quite a bit longer. But that was the thing I was going to tell you. I'm actually living out my dream now.
See, when we do what we love, then we love what we do and we are successful at it. And that's just common sense.
Yes, it is.
Okay. If we all did what we loved instead of what we were told to do, we would have our communities, our cities, our towns, our states, our country would be prosperous beyond our imagination, simply because everybody would love to go to work. They felt like they were contributing. And they have purpose. And when you do what you love, you just want to do it all the time. No one can stop you. You're like a bullet out of a gun. You're just going to hit your target no matter what. You understand that success is 99% failure. You welcome the failures. You know that with every failure, you're that much closer to a success. You have self-esteem. You don't allow yourself to be abused. You don't allow yourself to be manipulated. You don't allow yourself to be taken advantage of in any way, shape, or form by anything at all.
That's so true. Yeah.
Imagine, folks, that is the life that we all want, and we can live it at any moment, seriously, at the snap of just
snapping your fingers.
A conscious decision that you are not going to react to information. You're not going to react to the information you get on the news, from your spouse, from your relatives, from your neighbors, from your children. You're going to take in the information, logically make a decision that benefits you and everyone around you, even if it means a compromise. And you're going to go with that instead of making a big deal out of nothing or a fight or just having any kind of emotional reaction, which always leads to poor decision making and a mess that you have to clean up at the end.
Oh, yes, it does. I've had many, many jobs, occupations, careers, whatever you want to call them, that I just did not like. I'm not even getting paid at this, and I enjoy the heck out of it.
I do too. You know, when I was a little girl, I was in fourth grade, and I decided that I wanted to be a writer. I wrote a book by hand, 325-page novel about this little babysitter who uncovered a crime. She was like a super sleuth or something. And I brought this to my teacher, and I told her I wrote this. And she said she was amazed. Within 2 days, there was a young authors convention that was happening down in Miami Beach at the convention center. And she took me on a personal field trip, and all the kids hated me for the rest of the year for this. But we went downtown and she took me to this convention. I met all of these different authors and I met all of these different kids who were from 18 to, you know, around my age, being in fourth grade or even in third and second grade, who, like me, like to write and were creative. And I remember that woman. Her name was Mrs. Schreiber. And she said, Suzanne, never stop writing no matter what. And I'll tell you, I took a different direction in my life. I used to write short stories. I used to write poetry. I used to write song lyrics. I took a different direction in my life. I stopped writing when I picked up the keyboard, not the pencil, and I started writing again with my news articles. It ignited something in me. It was that other girl who was in fourth grade who wrote that novel. She came out again, and I'm allowed to do this thing. And I'm so grateful that people like what I do because I absolutely enjoy it. I love it. It sets me on fire. It makes me feel great to find out this information and then pass it along to other people. And when I get done with an article and I've uncovered these things and I know that it's great and it's informative and people are going to be able to make good decisions for themselves after reading this information, I feel great about it. I feel excited. I read the article to my husband. I just, you'll never believe what I found. I want everyone to feel that excitement. And we all can feel that excitement if we do what we want, what makes us feel excited about our life, gives us purpose that we know we were made to do. And our country and our towns and our cities and our family and our friends will all be enriched by us because we are happy and we are fulfilled, and not by drugs and alcohol and not by trends and not by whatever we see in the movies, but by who we are. We are now free to be who we are. And you want to talk about a sovereign citizen, that is the ultimate in sovereignty. When you are now free to be exactly who you are emotionally and contribute to your country and to your friends and to your community in such a way that enriches their lives because you are giving of your ultimate self.
Wow. Wow. I almost didn't even want to turn my microphone back up there for a second. You are so good. You are,
I'm just a farmer. I'm planting seeds. I'm hoping something will grow.
Yeah. I guess we're all just farmers behind the microphone trying to plant seeds, trying to cultivate minds.
This is just one form of a society, folks. This is just one form of a monetary system. This is just one form of a government. There are a myriad of ways in which we could do this. Let's expand our minds. Obviously, this way doesn't work, okay? Let's call a spade a spade. So let's try and figure out what would work. Well, we have all of these technological advancements, so maybe going back to Little House on the Prairie wouldn't be so great. Maybe we should use these technological advancements to our benefit, to enrich our society instead of degrading it and making it a police state in some scary technocratic Terminator film.
Yeah, but you know, Suzanne, studies have shown that the technology is out there. I mean, just to digress a little bit, but you talked about Little House on the Prairie. Technology is out there to make desert land into farmland, and studies have shown that Africa, the continent of Africa, could feed the entire world. Not just Africa. I mean, not even a continent that big. Studies have shown that I think the state of Texas could feed the entire world too, if it was farmland. But, like I said, a little bit of a digression there.
No, it is pertinent because the way in which our planet's weather systems are able to function are being disrupted in such a gargantuan scale that I don't know what the long-term ramifications will be, and I don't know if anybody else does. But it doesn't seem like it's very good. They put out this study, and I saw this article out of Time magazine. They were talking about how climate change was going to cause the next great famine. Well, it's funny to me because the climate has changed, yes. And yes, it is man-made because it's been geoengineered to this point. And now we are seeing the ramifications of geoengineering. And they've been tampering with the weather since 1908. There's a long time coming. And as technology advanced, they got better at it and they tried new things. And now they've got all of this crap in the chemtrails.
The patents go back that far, don't they?
I wrote an article, 13 patents that I thought were incredible. The oldest patent I found was in the 1920s.
Wow.
Okay? They've been doing this for a long time. So I don't know what a normal cloud looks like. My children have never seen anything but chemtrails. And my grandchildren, I don't know what they're going to be looking at. Yeah. But this goes back so far that our planet's weather systems are so badly damaged that we don't know what the hell's about to happen. And nobody else does either, folks, okay? They're putting this information into predictive models. And folks, predictive models are so easy to manipulate. Michael Mann and Climate the gate. Look that up. I've got it on OccupyCorporatism.com. Predictive models are BS because they doctor it. They can control the information that's put in to get the prediction that they want. Okay. And that's exactly what they do with them. So we don't know what's happening with this weather. We don't know what the future of it is, but we do know that since they've been tampering with it, it's really gone haywire. So what we need to do is get rid of the geoengineering because it's obviously going to destroy the planet. And I don't know about you folks, but chocolate is very important to women. And I like chocolate. And I don't know of any other planet that's got chocolate on it. So we need to save this planet now, what is
Okay, but what does geoengineering have to do with chocolate, though?
I'm just saying, we just need to save the planet that has the chocolate. Okay? If you don't care about anything else, please care about
save the chocolate.
Save the planet for the sake of chocolate, please.
Well, we're at the end of the show here, so I guess we'll go ahead and end this. It's been a great, great show again with you.
Oh, I love it. Ask me back anytime.
Don't say that, young lady.
You and I have a great rapport and we're able to actually have a really good conversation and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on again. Maybe I'll tell Michael to go ahead and fall asleep more often and forget to wake up.
I know sure. I don't mind riding shotgun.
All right. Well, everyone, I'm going to go ahead and stop this show for tonight. I'm going to put a promo on and then let Angel take the stream from there. So I'll put a couple things on and say goodnight, everyone. I'll see everyone next Saturday night at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. So, whoops, I forgot my microphone there. I turned it off too quick. Sorry about that, everyone. So, for Suzanne Pozell, I'm Stephen Robertson. This has been Unraveling the Secrets. Good night.